This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And we move to a look at some very interesting things going on in the New York City Police Department.
2 years ago, police officer Adrian Schoolcraft in Brooklyn's 81st Precinct in Bedford-Stuyvesant became gravely concerned about how the public was being served. To document his concerns, he began carrying around a digital sound recorder to secretly record police officers. Mimi spoke with Graham Raymond, staff writer for the Village Voice, who reports on the NYPD officer who is told to distort crime statistics and what the revelations in his series has led to for the public.
Now, NYPD's crime tracking method CompStat pressures police to frivolous arrests but ignores serious crime reports to doctor statistics. With Graham Raymond, Village Voice reporter, and you're going to hear some of the tapes that were recorded by Adrian Schoolcraft.
Graham, to my knowledge, never before has an officer engaged in such recordings and offered the public such an intimate, revealing, troubling view, in their own words, the police, that is, of manipulation of crime statistics through quotas and at the same time the downgrading of actual reported crimes. And of course, we should say that CompStat is precisely what the city relies on for its boasts about effective policing and public security. So through your five-part ongoing series, what is it that prompted Adrian Schoolcraft to record his fellow officers, and what did he discover in that process?
What he told me was that he wanted to develop a body of evidence about things that he didn't agree with that were happening in the precinct. Eventually, he was going to put it into a report that would be forwarded to the police commissioner.
And what is it that he didn't agree with, and what did he do to try to get what he discovered made known and dealt with within the department?
One thing was the refusal to take criminal complaints from victims for various reasons, the downgrading or sort of dismissing of what crime victims were saying, the incredible pressure to achieve quotas for arrest summonses, stop and frisks, that was an almost constant drumbeat from the supervisors in the precinct, staffing shortages that have been causing the precinct to have just a handful of officers, for example, on a day shift. And the last thing would be just pressure on officers to cut corners on some of the legal standards that they have to achieve in seeing criminal misconduct.
Well, let's flesh this out more. So quotas, I think most of us have long suspected that in various things there are quotas. But tell us more about how this really played out and what the consequences of these quotas to inflate the CompStat numbers as to the arrests made in a precinct.
Precinct commanders' career futures are really tied to how their precincts are doing, and the way that the New York City Police Department measures that is by looking at what sort of numbers the precincts are generating. The tape recordings indicate that on a daily basis, the police officers were being pressured to hit unwritten quotas for someone's arrest and stop and frisk. If they didn't hit those quotas, they were being told that they would suffer some kind of career damage, transfers, loss of assignment. They would lose their partner. Their partners would be switched. They would move to another shift. They might move to a different precinct. That's where the problem is. I mean, you can tell people that they have to be productive and they have to hit a certain number, but once you tie it to some sort of disciplinary penalty, then it becomes illegal.
Give us an example of what one of these quotas resulted in. I know in your series you talk about somebody who wound up being severely injured over nothing more than a violation with these pumped up quotas.
I'll just give you a really benign example. Someone's walking to the store, let's say it's the end of the month, and the quotas are they're recorded monthly. So someone's walking to the store to buy a gallon of milk, and the police officer sees this person, and he's short on his stop and frisk for the month. And so he stops the person and questions them, gets their name and identifying information, and fills out a form and moves on. And a stop and frisk isn't supposed to be done to hit a quota. It's supposed to be done because that officer thought that that individual was involved or was about to be involved in criminal activity. So that's how the numbers can sort of distort what the police officer's role is. The woman that you referred to happened to be living across the street from a location where police officers had been focusing on, and she merely began to inquire what was going on, and that resulted in a conflict that ended up with her being arrested and getting two broken wrists. It was something that probably, that I don't believe, should have escalated into what it ended up.
So we have untold numbers of hours that Schoolcraft has been recording. What do we learn from the sound and the process within the precinct of the tapes that were given to yourself, to the voice, by Mr. Schoolcraft? What does it sound like? What are the officers in charge there doing when they're telling people that they have to fulfill these quotas that are offensive and very likely illegal?
I think for the first time, you're hearing what police officers are told on a daily basis by their commanders. You're hearing what their marching orders are. And we have on the Village Voice website a number of excerpts, and your listeners can listen to those excerpts and judge for themselves what they feel about what's being said to the officers. That's what's so unusual, almost historically so, about the tapes, is that you're hearing from inside the precinct for the first time.
Nobody in this department deserves a 5, and they're giving them out in 4.5. Nobody deserves a 4.5. Really? No. If anybody read the standards, what a 4.5 and what a 5 are, the standards are, nobody deserves those things.
Okay, thank you.
I had no time to really get to the sergeants to tell them to reevaluate their personnel correctly. If everybody evaluated their personnel correctly, they will see, according to the department, now I'm on the phone, according to what the department standards are, what a 4, what a 5, what a 4.5 is, and what a, you know, 3. Because most police officers are just basically meeting standards. They're basically doing what they're told to do. Very few police officers are actually going above and beyond the recommended minimum accomplishments, you know? And those who are should get their 4 in the 4.5. For the most part, most police officers are just meeting standards. It's just, you tell them, you know, hey, this is our performance objective for this period of time, and they basically either do that or come in less. My darling, can't get enough of your love, baby. Yeah, I was talking to, I think, Martin Davis, and I was telling him about evaluating personnel appropriately, you know, by the department standards of what each thing should be and what each person should qualify as based on those things. We as supervisor, you know, unfortunately, if we like you, you get a certain thing. If we don't like you, you get a certain thing. As opposed to what the performance standards of the what the department requires, which is horrible. But you know, I have no time to change the entire department's mind, unfortunately.
Did you happen to have a vacation thing? Sunday and Saturday. Sundays and Mondays. Good luck.
Oh, basically. Wow. On that date, we spoke, but the activity needs to improve it, the overall activity. You know, I gave you a choice. You know, there's other tours available if you choose. You know, maybe that might be more conducive to, you know.
But how do I improve it?
Huh?
How do I improve it?
How to improve it? By basically go out there and maybe answer some more radio runs, do more summonses, might write some more reports and stuff, be more active, proactive out there, you know. If you have any trouble seeing activity, maybe we'll put you with a more active officer that's able to see activity, one with high activity, and maybe be able to point them out to you. You know, those are possibilities.
In the tapes, as you hear, the precinct commander and the lieutenants and sergeants who are under him, they want to move people off of corners in the evenings in Bed-Stuy. They're telling the officers, in essence, to cut corners, to move people off the corners if they... I think this is a repeated series of orders on the tape. If there are groups of people on corners in certain parts of the precinct, they're to ask them to leave. If they won't leave, they should be arrested.
So you're actually, it sounds like, having mass roundups that are done, and you take a community that is predominantly African American. There's got to be some civil rights violations there.
Well, it's a little bit more nuanced than that, and it's highly questionable to me and to other people who listen to the tapes whether those orders led to civil rights violations in practice, and that's something that I think should be looked into further.
So we have Schoolcraft, who's a whistleblower in effect. What actually happens to him?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but in essence, he begins to run afoul of precinct politics because he's asking questions about some of the things that I've been talking about. He begins asking questions within the precinct, and then he begins to go to other elements in the police department. He goes to the captain and borough command. He reports what he thinks is misconduct to a couple of department doctors. He reports to internal affairs. And through this period, which is in 2009, he's sort of labeled as somebody who within the precinct who's not sort of going along with the program. And then on October 31st of 2009, 3 weeks after he's reported, he's met with department investigators for 3 hours about the downgrading of crime complaints. He leaves work an hour early. There's an aggressive reaction from his superiors in the precinct, which ultimately ends up with him being taken to Jamaica Hospital by force.
I thought you did go sick today.
I did go sick.
Right, and the sergeant asked you to stay for a few minutes, right? Because she had to speak to you first. So you disobeyed an order. And now you have. Yes, you did.
Listen to me.
I'm a chief in the New York City Police Department. You're a police officer. And then you have umpteen people out here standing in the rain. And don't tell me you don't hear them knocking on the door. Okay? And when they call your cell phone and you hang up. So this is what's going to happen, my friend. You've disobeyed an order. And the way you're acting is not right at the very least.
Chief, if you were walking up in your house, stop right there, son.
Son, I'm doing the talking right now, not
in
you.
My apartment.
In your apartment. You are going to be suspended. All right? That's what's going to happen. You can go see the surgeon if you're sick. We'll give you all the medical attention you need. At the end of it, you're suspended, son.
Adrian, lie down in the bus and we'll go.
I can lie down in my own bed. I haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah, you have.
Okay, go write it, file it. Write it up.
But now
you don't need me there.
Now it's coming down to
I disobeyed an order from Sergeant Huffman. Write up whatever you want.
Now it's a matter of your health.
Adrian, listen to me. All right, son? Hit the line here. Right now, EMS is saying that you're acting irrational. This is them, not us. And that if you don't go to the hospital, listen to me.
They're whispering in their ears.
Adrian, they are not.
Chief, do what
Adrian,
you gotta do.
Listen to me. They're going to treat
you as... Do what you got to do. If I have a heart attack,
son,
you strap me up.
Listen to me, son. They're going to treat you as an EDP. Now, you have a choice. You get up like a man and put your shoes on and walk
like
into that bus like a man. Or, son, they're going to treat you as an EDP, and that means handcuffs. And I do not want to see that happen to a cop. I don't want to see them cuff you and bag you.
I hope I don't have a heart attack.
Son.
When your inspection's whispering in EMS's ear.
Listen, son. They're not whispering to anybody. They're here because they're doing their job. You've caused this.
I didn't cause anything.
You have caused this. Now, you have a choice. They're saying you have to go to the hospital. That's EMS. Those are trained medical professionals. And if you don't go...
Then why are they talking to them?
And if you don't know, and you don't go, then you're not acting rationally. And they say now they're afraid you're emotionally disturbed. So you have a choice. You get up, you put your shoes on, your coat, and you go to the hospital and get looked at. You said you don't feel good. They said your blood pressure is high. You need to get checked.
Always high.
You need to get checked.
Caused by you, Chief.
Yes, caused more by me. You've never seen me before in your life.
Huh?
You've never seen me before in your life.
I have seen you.
Son, you got a choice. What is it going to be?
I'm laying right here until I feel better.
Okay, son. He's EDP. He's EDP.
Cups?
Yeah. Are you gonna go? I don't want to see this happen to you.
I'm gonna go to the hospital.
Then let's go.
Are you going now?
When I feel better.
No.
Yeah,
it's
you don't
now.
Have a choice.
Trained medical professionals are saying now.
You're gonna cuff me.
No, I don't even know
no.
what that is.
No, I'm a perp.
No,
he's
you're emotionally disturbed.
To you.
You're making a choice, son, of your own, Adrian. You can get
I am.
Walk
I'm
out
laying
here.
Here.
No.
I'm laying
they
here.
They say
Chief.
You have to go. Now we're obligated to bring you.
I'm laying here, Chief.
For your own
my
safety.
Back hurts.
Okay.
My stomach hurts.
Adrian, get up.
My
get up.
Blood pressure.
I can't play this game, Adrian.
I can't stand up.
No,
I don't feel good.
Please stand up.
I don't feel good.
Put your hands behind your back.
Why am I putting my hands behind my
because
back?
Because you have to go to the hospital.
Yeah, so you're going to put handcuffs on me because I have to
run out? I'm giving you your choice, Adrian. How am I being arrested? Adrian, get up and walk out, or we're going to have to treat you as an EDP.
How am I being arrested?
All right, just take him. I can't play this game anymore.
Do me a favor. Put your hands behind your back. Put your hands behind your back. Get one hand. Go ahead. Get one hand. Get one hand. Get one hand. Give me the other hand.
I got him.
You want to hop on that? Give me the other hand.
Adrian,
give me the other hand. Give me the other hand. Give me the other hand.
Adrian, stop.
I got the other hand.
Got my chest. Adrian, stop it.
My chest. Oh, my chest. Oh, my chest.
Oh, my chest. Okay, let's get him out. Pull the bus up. Let's get a chair. Get him to the hospital forthwith. He's complaining of chest pains. Let's get him to the hospital. We'll get you to the hospital right away, Adrian. You didn't have to do this. I don't know what your agenda is or why you're doing this. There's no need for this.
You're too good to me, boss.
Yeah, well.
How are you so good to me?
As good as you deserve, son.
He placed in a psychiatric facility, Jamaica Hospital, for 6 days against his will. I was able to get the hospital records, and it shows that police gave the hospital inaccurate information about his behavior that night that led them to have him committed against his will.
I know he is now suing the police department, but there's also an officer, Polanco, who did similar action in the Bronx. But as a whole, what is your assessment now, listening to these tapes, following these stories, a five-part ongoing series, as to the nature of the abuse? What does it mean for public safety to have the imposition of quotas on one hand to inflate statistics and on the other hand downgrading real crimes that are taking place and not carrying through with the investigation to make sure that you don't have numbers that make it look like there's too much serious crime in a neighborhood? What is this all about, really?
I think the tapes and the statements of Officer Schoolcraft and Officer Polanco and some of the other people I've talked about in my series, it raises a whole series of really troubling questions about how the police department operates. I think that the department, at a minimum, the mayor's office, or maybe an outside body, should really take a look at how these policies are being implemented. And thus far, there's been some willingness to investigate certain elements of the series, but I think they raise a whole series of broad questions that need further investigation. One, to what extent downgrading of criminal complaints and refusal to take criminal complaints from crime victims is a problem throughout the city, throughout the precincts. Two, to what extent officers are being asked to do stop and frisks to hit quotas. One thing that's happened in the last 5 years is that stop and frisks have exploded and it's become very controversial. I think what the tapes show is that one of the reasons for why they've grown so much is because of quotas. The stop and frisk is not supposed to be, it's not supposed to take place just because the officers are being asked to do them to hit some number.
An end in and of themselves. And what about the response of Police Commissioner Kelly as this information comes out, as this stunning five-part series that you've written has been spread across the media?
It's been very interesting. I've sent a number of very detailed queries to the police commissioner's office, the mayor's office, and no responses have been forthcoming. But as you can read in the fifth part of the series, there have been a number of internal investigations that have started, and there have been some transfers and some other things that have happened. So I'm not sure. It's kind of a strange situation where officially there's been very little comment. Unofficially, there's been activity behind the scenes.
Raymond, thanks for the five-part ongoing series that concludes that the NYPD's crime-tracking method known as CompStat pressures police to distort crime statistics.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Wow, I'm still reeling from the outrageous slings and arrows of the police department and the crime that it perpetrates, as well as obviously the way it treated Adrian Schoolcraft.
At the same time, NYPD whistleblower Adrian Schoolcraft was secretly recording his supervisors in a Brooklyn precinct. An officer named Adil Polanco was doing the same thing a borough away in the Bronx. Polanco recorded supervisors and police union delegates in the 41st precinct, haranguing him to meet a quota of arrests and summonses.
He claims the witness supervisor's refusing to take reports. He's tired of the demands, particularly the pressure to stop and frisk innocent New Yorkers. Here is a report aired on a New York City ABC affiliate reporting on the covert practices recorded by Adil Polanco.
A New York police officer tonight breaking the infamous blue wall of silence and speaking out about something the NYPD has always denied. Cops have quotas for arrests and for tickets. And the officer says the pressure to make quotas means the arrest of innocent people. Investigative reporter Jim Hoffer is here with his exclusive. Jim?
Bill and Liz, a five-year veteran of the NYPD, says his conscience could no longer allow him to remain silent. He claims that the 41st Precinct in the Bronx, it's all about numbers, number of arrests and summonses, often of young minorities who have done nothing wrong. When Officer Adil Polanco dreamed of becoming a cop, it was out of a desire to help people, not, he says, to harass them.
I'm not going to keep arresting innocent people. I'm not going to keep searching people for no reason. I'm not going to keep writing people for no reason. I'm tired of this.
Officer Polanco says One Police Plaza's obsession with keeping crime stats down has gotten out of control. He claims precinct commanders relentlessly pressure cops on the street to make more arrests, give out more summonses, all to show headquarters they have a tight grip on their neighborhoods.
Our primary job is not to assist anybody. Our primary job is to get those numbers and come back with them.
Why do it?
They have to meet the quota. One arrest, 20 summonses.
Things are not going to get any better. It's going to get a lot worse.
This audio recording, exclusively obtained by Eyewitness News, seems to back up Officer Polanco's assertion of a quota. Listen to one officer as he lectures patrolmen during roll call at the 41st Precinct.
If you think 1 in 20 is breaking your ball, guess what you're going to be doing? You're going to do a lot more. A lot more than what you think.
In another recording, a patrol supervisor appears to step up the pressure to write more and more summonses.
Next week, it could be 25 or more. It could be 35 or more. And guess what? If you decide you're going to switch this job, a couple of people are delivering that, this is what you're going to be doing until then. We understand it, sir.
He's being clear. The only choice that we have is to do it.
You're telling me that they're just stopping people without a reason? Is that what you're saying?
We're stopping kids walking from school. We're stopping kids walking upstairs to their house. We were stopping kids from going to the store. Kids, young adults.
In order to keep your activity.
In order to keep that quota.
And it was just treating us like we was criminals.
The Colborne brothers say they and three other friends were the victims of quotas, all arrested a few months ago after one of them had fallen while racing each other.
And they just wanted to arrest us. I told them I fell, but none of that mattered to them.
All five were accused of engaging in tumultuous and violent conduct that caused public alarm, given a summons for unlawful assembly, and locked up overnight.
We went through the whole process, and we never even see the judge. They let us out the back door.
The charges were dropped, but Officer Polanco says the patrolmen still got five summonses toward their monthly quota.
Even if the crime is not committed, the number's there, so our choice is to come up with a number.
One Police Plaza declined our request for interviews, but Deputy Commissioner Paul Brown said police officers, like others who receive compensation, are provided productivity goals, and they are expected to work.
The consequences will be very strong.
Consequences that he says includes loss of overtime, shift change, and denial of days off if an officer fails to make his numbers. An intense pressure that Officer Polanco says leads to bogus summonses.
I cannot be more honest than I've been. I cannot. There's no reason for me to lie. There's no reason for me to get into trouble I am, because I just could have kept quiet.
About a month after Officer Polanco came to us with his story, he was suspended for disobeying orders and pushing his supervisor. It happened after getting into a heated argument for not being allowed to accompany his partner to the hospital after he became ill. Polanco is back at work, but on modified duty, pending the outcome of an investigation. In October, Bill and Liz, Officer Polanco also filed a formal complaint with Internal Affairs.
He's worried there'll be more ramifications against him?
What do you think?
Good story, Jim.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right, Jim, thank you.
The New York City Police Department has assigned a ranking officer to look into a wide array of allegations of misconduct, including charges that crime complaints were ignored or manipulated in the 81st Precinct in Brooklyn, according to two law enforcement officials with knowledge of the investigation. The examination is the third inquiry into allegations made by Officer Adrian Schoolcraft, who first began reporting problems to the department's Internal Affairs Bureau in August 2009. The first two investigations led the department to file non-criminal internal charges against five officers in the precinct, including its former commander, Deputy Inspector Stephen Moriello.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.